Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and is a graduate of the Institute of Culinary Education and earned a BSA in Marketing Management from the University of Michigan. Her name is synonymous with wedding cake challenges on the Food Network, and her true passion is to share culinary techniques and how to prepare energizing superpower foods. Her name, Michelle Bomarito, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Prisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Prisula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Michelle Bomarito, whose name is synonymous with wedding cake challenges on the Food Network. Michelle, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for having me here.
Can we start by talking about your mother and your dad and your childhood?
Wow. Well, Bomarito, my last name, should tell you that it's an authentic Italian. And our family was all centered around the kitchen. Being in the kitchen, cooking foods, baking, always celebrating life by sharing suppers together and making and creating dishes together. I have three siblings, and my mom and dad were really great with instilling just always being together and sharing in either the chores or the yard work and or the making supper and preparing things for holidays and special occasions. And my mom and dad were great as far as just the family unit and the love and the support that they always gave their children and us. It kind of allowed us to go through life with some strength that was beyond, like, just a lot of faith that they had in their children and to encourage us to live our dreams.
Michelle, when you think of Italians, one of the first things you think of is food. Meals are feasts. They're love affairs. Why is that?
I believe that, like, food is just like the universal language, and basically just food is, you know, obviously it's our nourishment every single day. We have to have breakfast, lunch, and supper, and snacks, and it's the way we fuel our bodies to go through life. And to me, it should be something joyous, and it should be something that's delicious, and it should be something that's shared. And especially in an ethnic family, whether you're Italian or Jewish or Greek, basically I believe that it's I don't know. I just feel like it's such an important part of life that it should be something that is celebrated. In sharing food while you're sharing really good conversation with your family members or your friends, it's a beautiful time.
You started working at the Bomarito Market when you were 9 years old.
Yes.
On Saturdays. What did that experience teach you?
Well, my family, both my parents were really hard workers, and like they had instilled a really strong work ethic. And I just remember not having to go to work with my father, but wanting to go to work with him. And we would get up, I believe, at like 5 a.m., and I would go to his store with him. My grandfather would be there, and my great auntie would be there, and they would allow me just to see the excitement of having a grocery store, a market, and people would come and from all over to experience their Italian sausage that we manufactured, and all our Italian produce and all our Italian goods that came from Italy that we imported. And it was exciting, and it was also really good for me to learn about customer service and being with people, and just again about food. And they would put me on a milk crate literally, and I would grade Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. That was my job pretty much as a 9-year-old, and just grade it every single day, you know, every single Saturday. And I would also work the register. My auntie would be behind me working the register and just making sure I was doing everything right, but I was ringing in the food, you know, for people to pay me. So I was learning about skills. And then I was also learning about just the joy of food and in customer service and compassion with people and just seeing regular customers every week. It was a great learning experience.
In your 10 years, you decide my mission in life, my calling, is to work in the hotel industry.
Yes.
You go to Michigan State in their hospitality program, and you get into the hotel business. What was your first job in the hotel industry?
My first job in the hotel industry, ironically, was as a sales manager, but it was to work with their food and beverage department, which was not in my goal. My goal was to be a general manager of a bed and breakfast in Europe someday. And ironically, it was centered around food. But to me, I looked at it as a stepping stone instead of being, this is where I want to be. So I just did the job basically to get to being, you know, into the sales department, to being a director of sales, to being a general manager. But as life turns, it was ironically, it was that job that led me to go to Italy and do other things regarding food.
You got a bachelor's degree in marketing management and a minor in psychology from the University of Michigan. You go to work for the Marriott organization. You're with them for years. What did that chapter in your life teach you?
Oh, just, you know, I was in sales at that point, and it encouraged me to just go out there and be kind of relentless to go after business. We had a task list of what we had to accomplish every week for our sales team, and we had to report what we were doing, and we had to bring in the business and bring in the dollar amounts and the revenue. So I just love going out in any business that I saw an opportunity to come use our hotel services. I just would go knock on their door or make a cold call, and it taught me to kind of, I guess, to be relentless and not knowing that I had a good service to offer, and I was doing them a favor by knocking on their door and showing them what the value of our property was for the Marriott. And it taught me, every week I had to report what I was doing. I would see the dollar amounts and the revenue coming in. I would get another, you know, a raise in my position, or it just gave me that I don't know, that authority to say, hey, I'm good at marketing and I love it, and I'm also like to go out in the world and present yourself and not be afraid and just, you know, just go out there, go after what you want.
We're talking to Michelle Bomarito. When we come back, we'll ask her about an Italian gentleman that she met in 1994 that convinced her to move to Italy, changed her life. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're with Michelle Bomarito. And in 1994, she met an Italian gentleman, Enrico. How could you say no to Enrico? Convinced you, moved to Italy, come to work for him. He had a conveyor belt company, and it changed your life.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, ironically, Jack, while I was working for Marriott, I always felt like I loved what I was doing, but I felt like there was more. And I never could explain what that more was. And I always felt like there was like this figurative tap on my shoulder saying, hey, there's something else out there. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Even though I loved my sales position with Marriott. And this gentleman I met, he was staying at the hotel for 1 month. And he looked so lonely. He didn't speak English. And I just felt sorry for him. So I went to his director and said, you know, can I take Enrico to my family? We'll play bocce, we'll play cards, he'll be able to communicate with people that speak Italian. And he said, absolutely. And over the course of a month, this director got to know me also, and as well as Enrico, I got to know him very well. They said to me, we want to hire you to go to Italy. Now, although the job wasn't, you know, in the hotel industry, I thought this is a great idea to go to Italy, like an opportunity. So I just leaped upon it and said yes. And the best thing about it was, while I was in Italy, even though I was going to be doing sales and marketing for this Italian conveyor belt company, all during my free time, all I really did was look at the food and take pictures of the food. And the family I lived with would always be in the kitchen. And as we know, again, food is the universal language. I hardly spoke Italian, and they didn't speak English. So we would always be in the kitchen cooking, and I would be jotting down recipes and taking photographs and really involved in it, really passionate about it. And I guess it was at that trip that I don't know if I call it a trip, but that adventure, that I said to myself, like, there's something here. There's, like, magic here with this food that I'm really enjoying this whole process of cooking.
While you're there, you decide to become a professional chef. You come back. Eventually, you get to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You enroll at the Institute of Culinary Education, and you take an unpaid intern job with the Waldorf Astoria.
Yes. Okay, so when I was going through college, I worked at the hotel industry as well as to pay for my college. And I remember like just learning about taking opportunities, even though you're not getting paid, to get the experience. So when I went to the Waldorf, I went there just solely for a tour. And the gentleman said to me, what are you doing in New York? I said, I'm taking some culinary classes. I'm thinking about becoming a chef. He said, you should come work here. And I said, no, I'm green. I can't work here. He said, no, it'll be an unpaid intern position, and you will learn from these top chefs, and you'll just watch and do, and we'll train you. I thought to myself, how great would that be? So I took it. And this was in addition to going to culinary school. So I had hands-on experience from chefs from all over the world. And they literally, I mean, I was not getting paid, but I was getting paid in a different way. And I would stay after work and work on projects and do competitions with them and just be their sidekick so that I could absorb all their knowledge. And that's what I was there for, is to learn. To me, New York was the best place to learn the culinary arts.
Next thing you know, Michelle, you're working with Martha Stewart and appearing on national TV together. How in the world did that ever happen?
That was a gift. That was I don't know if it was a gift. That was a blessing, actually, because I received a phone call. And to receive a phone call to be asked to work for somebody is the biggest honor, in my opinion. So I received a phone call to interview to be in the test kitchen of Martha Stewart's studio, which was in Westport, Connecticut. And I lived in Manhattan. And I was so excited that I was being recognized for my culinary skills. So I went for the interview. I received the job, and they wanted me to quit the Waldorf. And I'm like, no. I love the Waldorf. I love what they've done for me. It's a great position. I don't want to leave there. I said, but I can give you my days off. So I gave them 2 days, whatever my days off were. I would be a freelance artist for Martha Stewart working in her test kitchen. So when you would watch television or like look in the magazine and see different things and products, I was the girl with, amongst others, you know, behind the scenes preparing those items. And one of the greatest jobs I received was to resurrect this garden cake that she had made years prior. And the garden cake was all like vegetables and fruits and like soil, all edible. And I designed it to my own liking, and Martha approved it and her team approved it. And it was featured in her magazine. And the cool thing about working for Martha Stewart is, well, actually, the honor of working for Martha Stewart is that your work is being presented under her name, okay? So sometimes you don't always get credit. And the most beautiful gift that Martha did give me was in the magazine, it said, created by Michelle Bomarito. So she gave me the credit of creating that cake.
What was she like?
Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely. You know, ironically, when I met her the first time, I believe in, you know, eye contact and a firm handshake, you know, as a saleswoman, or just to have that connection with a person. And when I worked for Martha Stewart, I never met her for the first couple months. And they said she might walk in the kitchen. You're never going to know when she's, you know, going to pop up. And she walked into the kitchen, but she was carrying this big item, and I couldn't shake her hand, you know, but I believe in the human touch. So I remember, like, when she came up to me, she introduced herself, and I remember, like, it was almost like stroking her shoulder. I can't explain it, like, you know, on the radio, but I was like touching her in a way to connect with her. And I believe that's what kind of made our connection so strong, because I wasn't really, oh God, I'm scared to Martha Stewart. I respected her as Martha Stewart, but I wasn't intimidated by her, because we're all human. So I think that's what broke our barrier with being comfortable with each other, and her saying, wow, this girl's not afraid of me, because I think most people might be because of her stature and her presence in the, you know, in the industry. So working with her, when I got asked to be a guest on her show, it was absolutely incredible. Like, I mean, we were side by side, and I think my airtime was 27 minutes, just next to Martha Stewart, creating my cake that I designed for her, you know, for her magazine.
So you create this garden cake, and then in 2004, you get a call from the Food Network to compete in the first wedding cake challenge competition. And there were five contestants.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, at this time, I had really honed my skills in becoming a wedding cake designer. I love the artistry, and I love the attention to detail. And I love working with a couple during this joyous moment of love, you know, when they're beginning their life together. So it was like interaction with people and also artistry. So I was really, like, I was talented as far as doing wedding cakes. And to get a call, again, for something that you love doing was such an honor. So I accepted the invitation, and when I accepted the invitation, I didn't know that my fellow competitors, were amongst like people that were hot shots in New York City that were in the industry for 25 years. I had only been in the industry for like 2 years. So it was very intimidating, but also I'm like, you know what? They picked me for a reason. I'm going to go there strong. And so we were out in Beaver Creek, Colorado is where we filmed. So yeah, I mean, so the competitions are, you don't know, you're going blind. I've never been on television competing. Like, when you make a wedding cake, you make it behind the scenes in a bakery. And you take as long as you need to make this beautiful creation that tastes delicious and is fresh. But on television, you have 8 hours to create something that you would normally create in maybe 20 to 40 hours. So it's intense pressure. And
how did you do in that competition?
Well, it was stressful. There's so many stories I could go on and on. There was five of us, and there was two of us left standing, which means we didn't place, which is, I'm not embarrassed to say this, but when I went to the winner, the person who won, her name is Colette Peters, and she's like, she is the queen of wedding cakes, and she's very well known, many books she's written. I went and looked at her cake, and I saw her attention to detail and the execution, how it was so clean and neat, that I said, okay, this is what I need to strive to. I need to strive up to this, to be at this level in a rushed manner, but not really. And just the attention to detail was so beautiful that I don't know, even though I didn't win, I learned. You learn every time you compete or you do something, you challenge yourself like that.
Michelle, my mom was a great cook, south side of Chicago. And we would have layered cakes, pies, every night, homemade. And we would get to lick the spatulas, taste the frosting. You're not 110 pounds soaking wet. How are you so thin and cooking all of these wedding cakes?
Okay, so once upon a time, I had been diagnosed with something called Epstein-Barr virus. And that is when I got really knocked down physically. And ironically, it's when I was knocked down a little bit with my job because I just had come back from Italy. And I didn't know what I really wanted to do when I grew up. So I decided, this being knocked down was a significant turning point for me to change a lot of things. And one of them was to change my eating habits. Even though I ate healthy, my so-called healthy diet was not so, was not so healthy. So I went to a holistic doctor and he taught me how to eat properly, basically. And it's whole foods and lean cuts of meats and poultry and fish and a lot of oils, like extra virgin olive oils and flaxseed oils. And I learned this whole way of eating. So even though I became a wedding cake designer, my lifestyle and my regime of eating was all about eating healthy in natural whole foods. So I lived this way for many years till now. And that to me is what keeps me fit and energized and allows me to be able to work long hours as a chef.
We're talking to Michelle Bomarito, who's had over 25 years experience in the hospitality and food service industry. When we come back, we'll ask her about her latest career focus in her glorious life. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Michelle Bomarito. Michelle, in 2009, you began your latest career focus, wellness, eating well, exercising.
In 2006, I felt like it was time to move upward and onward and make a life kind of career-changing decision. And it was to leave my lucrative wedding cake business that I loved, but yet I thought there was more for me. It was time to reinvent Michelle. So I decided to leave my business. It took me 3 years to wean off of my business. And in 2009, I left. And some thought I was crazy, but I actually knew in my heart that I was doing the right thing. And I decided that I needed to really focus on my real passion, which was sharing the message regarding eating well. And I left. I remember giving my key back to my landlord and packing up all my equipment and my boxes and everything. And that same day, I had an event at Whole Foods. It was a charity event for breast cancer awareness. And I remember it was a sad day leaving this business and saying goodbye to it. But that night I had a charity event that I wasn't getting paid for. And I remember looking out into the audience and there was all these women listening to me about superpower foods and getting energy from your food and vitality and reaching for food as your fuel. And they were all just grasping onto every word and taking notes and tasting the food and saying how delicious it was. And in my heart, I'm like, you know what? I know exactly what you're doing right now. I questioned leaving the business. But when I saw this event that I wasn't even getting paid for and my heart was singing and I was smiling and people were happy, I knew this is the right career goal for right now.
Steve Courtney would say that superpower foods are pizza, fried chicken, etc. Michelle Bomarito, to you, what are superpower foods?
Well, I believe that whole foods really do give you energy throughout the day. And just I believe in caffeine. I drink one cup of coffee a day, usually in the morning. But I think the rest of the day, what fuels me is the foods that I eat, which are lean cuts of meats, poultry, fish, legumes, beans, seeds and nuts, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, just eating every 3-4 hours of what I believe gives you energy. The whole foods, I guess, to me, I believe in like, can you eat the rainbow? I don't know if anyone has ever heard that phrase before. It doesn't mean Skittles, like the kids always say, but eating the rainbow just is like colorful fruits and vegetables and things that nature provide that are going to give us energy as we eat them. So to me, superpower foods like chia seeds and hemp seeds and flaxseed oil and extra virgin olive oil and just everything that nature grows for us and that's available to us, and eating that instead of things that come in packages.
I quote you, "I've also learned and have become a firm believer that what we put in our bodies definitely," and you italicize that, mm-hmm, has an impact on our body, mind, and spirit.
Yes, absolutely. When I was sick with the Epstein-Barr virus, I was homeridden for about 3 months, and I literally was so exhausted, and I had literally no energy. I would just get up, bathe, eat a little something, go back to bed. And I literally, what I have learned is I went to a holistic doctor, as I mentioned, and his name was Dr. Zucker, and he put me on a whole new regime about flaxseed oils and good seeds and nuts and olive oils and good fats and all these beans and legumes and lean cuts of meats and poultry and fish. Again, the same concept that I eat now, and my energy just soared. So that was back in like 1996, that I believe that happened. After 2 weeks of being on this lifestyle with his diet regime, I couldn't believe the energy I received. So I kept continuing with that diet and lifestyle, and saw that my head was clear. I was lighter. I was leaner. I felt like I could focus more. So to me, it was because of the food I was ingesting.
If there's a listener tonight that says it's a new year, one of my New Year's resolution was to eat better, but I don't know where to begin. I don't know how to learn. Michelle, what should they do?
Call me. No, basically, I really believe that they should just go back to nature. What are, you know, they, research says like you should eat what your grandparents ate or your great grandparents would eat back in the olden days. And basically, it's foods that we grow, that we can hunt, that we can raise, that we can pick from a tree. That's the kind of foods you should be eating.
If you want to learn more, www.michelle with two L's. Bomarito, BOMMARITO.com. MichelleBomarito.com. Peter Nielsen's a good guy, mm-hmm, a good friend.
Yes.
I think the world of him. And he says that this is the first generation where the parents, mm-hmm, will outlive their kids.
Yes. It is, yes. I've heard that before also. I think there's so many factors involved. But I do believe nutrition is a key one, not just because I that's my career choice, but I also believe that just the food has changed so much with a lot of packaging and a lot of things that we don't recognize in the ingredient list that the children are ingesting that we didn't eat when we were children, nor did our parents or grandparents eat. So I think that's a significant factor.
Obesity. We're one of the most obese nations in the world, if not the biggest. Talk to us about obesity.
You know, I have been blessed with never really having to worry about my weight, but yet I've always been concerned about gaining weight. So I've always had this like mindset of wanting to fight obesity since I was, it's unbelievable. I don't know where it came from. And I just feel like it's not necessarily the diet. It's a whole lifestyle that people are, why people are obese. It's either lack of exercise or too much stress or toxins in the air or the pollution of just the mind, you know? So I think if people just started to change their lifestyle and drank more water, ate more clean and fresh ingredients, locally grown seasonal ingredients, and ate with their family with good conversation and good energy and got rid of some of the toxicity, whether it be working out or going to church and just finding an outlet other than holding it all in, I think that would make a huge difference.
You say that we should drink 1/2 our body weight daily in ounces,
yes,
of water.
Yes.
So if somebody's 200 pounds,
yeah,
you want them to drink 100 ounces of water a day.
Yes. Yeah.
How?
Well, what I recommend, it's a one-time task, is to find two vessels or maybe three vessels or a big container of some sort that you would literally measure out half your body weight in fluid ounces with water, and you'd fill it up. And then every day you would know that I need to drink two of these bottles or one and a half of this type of bottle in order to get my water fulfillment. We are made up of over 65% water, I believe. I don't even know the exact ratio, but I know it's over 65%. And our body needs to flush and clean and get rid of toxicity. And when you drink water, it's just like when you water a plant. If you ever look at a plant and you don't water it, you see the leaves start to droop and they start to get pale in color. And then there's no life to them. But when you water a plant and you get water in the veins and it starts shooting up, you see these stems and leaves all vibrant green and happy and nice and stiff and like, say, I'm alive. And that's how we feel when we're drinking water. Our eyes get clearer, our skin's clearer, our mental focus is better. It just flushes your whole system and you just look better. And it's amazing how different you feel by just drinking water. And plus, it helps with your diet. If you're eating a lot of fiber, you want to push the fiber through, and water is going to help do that.
If there's a listener that says, I can't lose weight because I don't have the discipline to starve myself and ignore the hunger, what do you say?
Okay, first of all, with my lifestyle of eating, there's no deprivation of any sort. What I do is I teach my clients to choose to eat this type of food versus this one. So you're constantly eating. It's just a matter of choice of what you're selecting to eat. And my recommendation is that you eat every 3-4 hours to keep the metabolism burning. And if you don't eat and you're depriving yourself, that's negative for one. And it's also slowing down your metabolism, which is going to have you hold on to the weight. When the body is not getting food, it says, oh my God, we're in starvation mode. Something's wrong. And it holds on. Versus if you're eating and you're eating good food that's going to help you like get the energy and your metabolism going, you're just going to shed off the weight naturally just because the body's being fueled by this food.
If you want to learn more, www.michellebomarito.com. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Michelle Bomarito, whose name is synonymous with wedding cake challenges on the Food Network. I quote you again now, Michelle. I believe by living each day to its fullest and treating everyone on the way with love and respect and staying on that straight and narrow path, despite any disappointments, that the fortune of a rich and satisfying life will be mine. You lead with your heart. Everything you do, you lead with your heart. Personally, I think it's a great way to live, but most people are afraid to lead with their heart. Why do you do it?
Because I'm 47 years old, and it's proven thus far to be a successful way of living. And I just love, I go out in the world, I travel alone for my job, or as an adventure for my, just something for pleasure. And I just go out in the world like as an adventurer with like fresh eyes that I'm going to meet friends. They're not strangers. No one's a stranger, in my opinion.
You have 9 steps of getting started the Bomarito style. Let's cover a few of them. Number 1, find your strength and your passion. Why is that important?
I have 4 nephews and 2 nieces, and I always encourage them, and I always try to ignite what they love doing to have that as their career goal. And I try to do that with all my seminars when I speak to children at various high schools and colleges. Basically, your strength and passion is your gift and your talent that you are, in my opinion, meant to be sharing with the world. And you're doing it on a daily basis. And I always encourage people to like want to jump out of bed like it's Christmas morning and you're excited to be alive and to share your gift. So by finding what you love doing and what you're good at, make that your career.
Number 3, create your own style and niche.
Yes. We're all individual, right? So I believe that my style and niche is teaching people how to eat healthy in a different way and not miss any other foods that they desired that maybe weren't good for them, but to kind of switch it up and make a healthier version of it. And that's my style of cooking. And I've, over the years, changed from being a regular savory chef to to being a more superpower food chef. And that's Michelle Bomarito's way. And that's what I believe is making me different from other chefs that are out there.
Number five, impress quality in every aspect of your job, career, or passion.
Anything worth doing is worth doing well. So I believe in investing in your skills, in your knowledge, and just doing what you do very well, and attention to detail and focus. And whether or not you have to give up sleep or give up going on a date or give up going to a holiday, you do it well. And you just, your name's attached to that end product.
If there's some listener that says, I can't afford quality right now. When I get successful, famous, wealthy, then I can focus on quality. Mm. What do you say?
Well, I believe the quality is what's going to get you, you know, going to get you there. So to me, you have to focus on the quality. Even if you can't afford to, you need to focus on providing a really good product now so that, God willing, it's going to be, you know, word of mouth that this is a great quality product, and eventually it will pay off.
If a listener's just found out that they've got cancer,
mm-hmm.
can they be cured by changing their diet?
Oh, no. Well, I think, again, many factors are involved in that situation. I believe that changing the way you eat definitely will have an impact. Definitely.
You've had some great experiences. One was the Ryder Cup in September 2004. It was here at Oakland Hills. And you got a call.
Oh, gosh. You know what was wonderful is that you give your business card out and you never know where it's going to be going. And I received a phone call inquiring for me to be able to be a personal chef for the entire week for 10 men to cook breakfast, lunch, and supper and snacks during the Ryder Cup. And I thought, okay, great. This is a great opportunity. And I presented this whole proposal. I emailed it to this woman out of Washington, D.C., and she came back to me and said, she disclosed a lot of information that I felt like I was maybe getting the job because she gave me the address. And she said, this is a high profile athlete. And I thought to myself, you know, I've done some local celebrities here in Michigan. I don't let that affect me. Not a problem at all. And she, luckily we were on the phone because I said it didn't really affect me. But when she told me who the person was, it absolutely affected me. And I remember I was on the telephone and she said to me, well, there's going to be some athletes there. The one major athlete is going to be athlete Michael Jordan. And I admired him over the years and I just went crazy, but she didn't see it. I was silently going crazy and then holding the phone and like jumping up and down. And I said, that's great. Absolutely. You know, wonderful. Thank you for, you know, asking me to be the chef. And from that experience, I remember being very obviously intimidated that it was going to be Michael Jordan. And these gentlemen have appetites, obviously. And I remember going to meet with his people and finding out what he liked and disliked and what his favorite foods were and favorite memory cookie was and things that were like nostalgic for him. I wanted to know all this so that when he came into the home, I wanted to be not that he's at this home that's like a shell. I want it to be as if he's home. So I had the entire pantry and refrigerator and all the beer and the wine and the beverages all stocked and made sure when they walked in, there was food on the table. And the one thing I did that I loved is I found out that Michael Jordan loves raisin oatmeal cookies. Okay, so I, of course, had them baking in the oven, homemade from scratch, baking in the oven. So when he walked in, it was home. These cookies were permeating in the air, the smell, the aroma of home. And I remember watching him, you know, when I first met him, I shook his hand. He was real polite. And I remember watching him reach for a cookie, but not like staring at him, but just watching him from afar. And then he took another one and another one. And it made me so happy, you know. So my joy as being a chef is not only the process of cooking and preparing the food and living in the moment of just enjoying the process, but it's also watching people that I care about or my customer eat the food and enjoy it. And that was like when he was eating this cookie and just kept taking more, it just brought a huge smile across my face.
A number of years ago, we had Jeff Daniels on the show, mm-hmm. and he talked for 5 minutes about taking risks mm-hmm. in life.
Yes.
It's the only way to live.
Yes.
You do that in spades every day. Every day is a new adventure to you.
Yeah.
How does somebody learn to take risk?
Well, you know what? Growing up, like I said, my family was always about encouraging us to do what we felt was like something that we were passionate about. So I had that confidence from my parents and that love and support that they always gave us. Never never fearing anything, basically. And my other, I mean, my number one is my faith in God. And I know that every day, I know that's what's keeping me going. And it's keeping me safe and it's keeping me protected. And I know that I'm never alone. And just, yeah, just being strong in faith.
A couple months ago, you went to Chicago and you were the MC
yes.
for America's Baking and Sweets show in Chicago. Michelle Bomarito, what does an MC do other than just sample at a baking and sweets show?
Okay, so basically, as an MC, my job responsibility is to meet each vendor and to kind of promote their company and what they're doing and what services they're offering as far as their product or whatever they're trying to sell at the show. So I invite them up on stage and I talk to them and I interact with them and I try to let them do all the speaking. I pose questions so that they're not kind of boisting about themselves, but they're able to give some marketing, you know, aspects about their product. And then as an MC also, when we have guest appearances of people that, like, you know, maybe perhaps a TV personality like Buddy Valestro or someone like famous, I interview them with the audience to kind of get everyone moving and excited about the whole show. So my job, and I love it because it's like meeting people every day. And I love being the MC at this Chicago show because I got to meet people from Chicago and just talk to them and interact and make sure everyone's enjoying the show.
As our time winds down together tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
I mean, number one is I seriously believe in eating well and just taking care of you, because this is without our health, we won't have the energy to go out in the world and do our adventures that we want to do. But I also believe in literally just praying or thinking very deeply about what you love doing and what you enjoy doing and what makes you smile, what makes you passionate, and what are your gifts and talents that only God blessed you with, and show that to the world. And literally, my young nephew, Anthony, he wants to be in video production, and he since a child, it was in him. We saw it, and now he is. When he was a child, now he's 19, and he goes to Western University studying video production, and that's his career move. And it's just so cool how, growing up, we always nurtured it and fed it, and now he's going to be that as a career move. So my thing is to inspire children is find that passion and just make it your career.
Michelle Bomarito, what a shining example of someone who lives love and loves life.
Thank you.
Keep it up.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem.